Hi, this is Chris Carter, and I'm here with George Harrison to discuss the 30th anniversary reissue of All Things Must Pass. George, when you began the sessions for All Things Must Pass, did you plan to record a double album, or for that matter, a triple album?
Well, when I started the album, All Things Must Pass, I was just trying to do a record, and I had so many songs that I just recorded one after the other and just kept doing backing tracks. And one day I thought, I better check out what's going on here, and I had 18 tracks. Also, the accountant at Abbey Road came down the stairs and said, is this record going to take much longer? So I thought, well, I think that's probably enough, and decided to put them all out at once.
How have your thoughts changed regarding the production of All Things Must Pass since it was first recorded in 1970?
Well, in those days, it was like the reverb was kind of used a bit more than what I would do now. In fact, I don't use reverb at all. I can't stand it. But at the time, I did the record with Phil Spector, and we did it like Phil Spector would do it. You know, it's hard to go back to anything 30 years later and expect it to be how you would want it now. I dare say, if I did a record today in 30 years, yeah, I probably would want to change it. That's the only thing about the production. It was done in CinemaScope, and you know, it had a lot of reverb on it to what I would use now, but that was how it was, and at that time I really liked it.
Both you and John Lennon chose to use Phil Spector as producer for your first proper solo albums. How come Mr. Spector?
Well, we knew him a little bit. He was he needed a job, and Phil was around, if you remember. He was brought in to London by Alan Klein when we'd done the record Get Back, or the Let It Be became the Let It Be record. Let It Be was supposed to be just a live recording, and we ended up doing it in the studio, and it wasn't, nobody was happy with it, but it was troubled times. Everybody listened to it back and didn't really like it, and we didn't really want to put it out. So later down the line, Klein, this guy Alan Klein, brought Phil Spector and said, well, what do you think about Phil looking at the record? So at least John and I said, yeah, let's see. We liked Phil Spector. We loved all his records. So let him do it. And he did what he did, and then, you know, everybody knows the rest. And so he was around, and one day I was with Phil, and I was on my way to Abbey Road to do Instant Karma. And so I made Phil go with me, and, you know, that's how he got to do that record as well. That was how we first started working with him.
Your friend Eric Clapton was originally only credited on the Apple Jam. How many other tracks do you recall Eric contributing to?
Well, he's on nearly every track there is. Like, the very first note on the album is Eric, and I'd have you any time. In those days, the record company, both my record company and his, they didn't like you to have your name on other people's records. They were very possessive. And so if you look on the record of the last Cream record, Goodbye Cream, my credit is Angelo Di Misterioso or something. That was me. He just didn't get any credit because they said you're not allowed to. Otherwise, you got to pay him royalties, or they have to pay me royalties. You know, it was some silly thing like that.
Let's talk briefly about a few of the songs here. Lead-off track, I'd Have You Anytime, kind of sets the mood for the whole album. Tell me about writing that with Bob Dylan.
Well, it was just one of those simple things. I just happened to be invited to Woodstock by the band. I spent some days with Bob, and I suppose we just got round to picking up guitars, and we were just, you know, he was saying, hey, what about those, show me some of them chords, those weird chords, and that's how that came about. It's like strange chord, really. It's called G major seventh, and it's got all these major seventh chords, so, you know, and we just kind of turned it into a song, so it's really nice.
My Sweet Lord was this worldwide hit single. What was it like being a solo chart topper with a song with such a positive spiritual message?
I can't really remember. I didn't really pay much attention to the charts. It's only now that, you know, people keep saying All Things Must Pass was up there for 7 weeks or whatever. I didn't really notice, you know. I mean, I'm not really very good at statistics or, you know, I like to just do something and let it go and then forget about it. So it was very nice, really. I mean, I got a lot of response from that record from people. I mean, half the Hare Krishnas joined because of that.
Let's talk about a few of the additional tracks added on to this 30th anniversary release. My Sweet Lord 2000. Tell me about re-recording this spiritual anthem 30 years later.
Well, I kind of enjoyed doing it because of a few reasons. I thought the song was, you know, at the time it was so popular and it was also very controversial. And the subject matter is not something that you normally hear, you know, people sing records like that, unless it's like gospel choirs or something. So I like the idea of going back to it, and especially because in this lawsuit I had about that, it was all down to these two phrases. One was do-do-do, phrase A, and do-do-do-do-do, phrase B. And that constituted, you know, what they said was an infringement of a copyright. So I really enjoyed singing the song again and not using those three notes in that order. And so that was one of the reasons I liked to do it, and also because it had so much response from people on a spiritual level years ago. You know, many people have written to me over the years saying, thanks for doing that song because that helped me to, you know, do this or go to join the Krishnas or whatever, or just look into myself a bit more. So I thought, well, I'll see if there's a reason to reinvent the song a little bit, and also maybe somebody would want to play it on the radio, give it a bit more promotion, and play a better slide guitar solo. So many reasons. It was fun.
Another additional track, I Live For You, is being heard for the very first time. Tell me why this one didn't make the final cut.
Well, I think originally it didn't sound like we'd got it. You know, on some of those songs we recorded them and then listened to them back and said, nah, I don't like it. We haven't done it right. And that's why there's actually two versions of Isn't It a Pity? And the first version, like the more up-tempo version, we did. And then after doing it for a few hours, I decided I didn't like it. And then some weeks later, we got around and we did it again. One of the guys in the band just started playing it and doing it that slow version. So then we did that. And then later, I looked back at the original version and I thought, oh, it's okay. So I used them both. But on I Live For You, it was just not right. The, you know, the nobody had the feel of it except the pedal steel guitar player and the rhythm guitarist. And so I didn't want to use it. I didn't think we got it. And I think at the time I was thinking, well, our song's a bit fruity anyway. We've got enough songs, we'll leave it off. So I just went back and fixed it up because people like to have bonus tracks.
And good ones. Okay, here's an Apple Jam question. What are your memories of recording It's Johnny's Birthday? Was it in honor of John Lennon's 30th birthday?
Yeah, Yoko asked us to give a recording for John's birthday, so I looked in the Abbey Road tape library and I found congratulations. And I just kind of slowed it down, speeded it up, added a few things, and we made up the words. And that was when I sent to her, to Yoko. I don't know how it ended up on the jam sessions, but there it is.
So what are your favorite songs on All Things Must Pass, and have they changed over the years at all?
I think I like Run of the Mill. You know, just something about the words, that what it's saying. And I like Isn't It a Pity. I like A Waiting on You All. I like the same ones now as I like then, but I like them all in some way, otherwise I wouldn't have done them.
So, George, the album cover's been colorized now. Did you originally want a color cover? And I see you've added some new additions to the skyline. Tell me about the artwork.
Well, originally, no, it was black and white because it was more arty, looked very artistic, especially on the big box. But now I thought, well, how can we, you know, if we just put it out the same photo. First of all, it needed to go back to the original photo anyway, because over the years it had got a slightly distorted. In fact, it looked a bit like a Xerox copy, so I thought we better get back to the original artwork. And we did that, and got the photos from the photographer Barry Feinstein, and there were color shots taken, but the color shots, they didn't make it really. The black and white was much better. So we decided to tint it like you would an old-fashioned photograph. Somewhere down the line, I was talking to the art director and said, maybe we should try having a flyover going through the back. And then the whole thing evolved into gas stations and high-rise apartments, just as a little dig at the way our planet is going at the moment, or has gone over the last 30 years. It's just turning into a big concrete block. So it's a bit of a cynical joke on reality.
So what are your plans, if any, for the rest of your back catalog?
I'll put them back out again. I think everything really could do with remastering, because originally they were done for vinyl. When CDs came in, somebody took them and digitized them, but the equipment's much better now anyway, so we can get a much more accurate sound, make a much better digital version of it. So I think to get them all back in the shops, nice and crisp and clean and fresh, you know, that's really what we'd like to do.
So, George, in closing, how would you sum up All Things Must Pass today?
I don't know, just something that was like my continuation from the Beatles, really. It was me sort of getting out of the Beatles and just going my own way. And so as my first record, it was very happy occasion. I think in some ways it stands up. It does, the sound on some of the records are a bit old. It sounds a bit old, but I think it kind of stands up still enough to justify what we're doing.